Afternoon, Council. In the matter of Rosemont Properties LLC versus IP Realty LLC, can we please have appearances, starting with appellant?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Keith Bonchi, Goldberg Mackler Law Firm, for the appellant, City of Jersey City.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Michael Capalupo of Chris and Forestine LLP for, respondent Rosemont Properties LLC.
Welcome, Council. We're glad to be able to participate with you remotely in this case. Mr. Bonchi, please go ahead. I'm going to ask Council to mute if you're not speaking, and my colleagues as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may I reserve 5 minutes on rebuttal of my time?
We'll have you back. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This fact pattern is a very simple fact pattern. What we have here is a second mortgage held by Jersey City on a property in Jersey City. The first mortgage that was given a couple of years earlier is secured by both the same property in Jersey City, but a second property in the township of Lakewood, which the second mortgage does not secure. The matter went into foreclosure. The first mortgagee files a foreclosure. There was contesting answer that was stricken. They move for final judgment. In your traditional situation, the second mortgagee in this case, City of Jersey City, under Rule 4:64-1E, a party holding a subsequent encumbrance could have gone ahead and filed an affidavit for the amount that's owed to the City of Jersey City, added it to the judgment, and at the sheriff's sale, they would have had to collect both the first and second mortgage. Or I could have had a bidder at the sheriff's sale protecting my second mortgage, bidding above the first. That's what traditionally happened. However, shortly before the sheriff's sale, or actually shortly before they applied for final judgment, unknown to the City of Jersey City on January 27, 2017, which is DA 230 in the record, the first mortgagee released the Lakewood property as additional collateral. The Lakewood property was valued at that time, undisputed in this case, over $1 million. As a result of that, and apparently the owner and the first mortgagee got together and decided they would do this. And as a result of that, they came up with this scheme. And I call it a scheme because they figured out in this way, the first mortgagee gets paid in full. The owner doesn't have to pledge the collateral that it pledged to this property. And the City of Jersey City essentially will get nothing because the value of the Jersey City property will be just enough to pay the first mortgagee. Because of these types of issues, going back pre-Civil War, which we have referred to as the credit doctrine, sometimes referred to as marshaling of assets or whatever, there's a body of case law we cited to you. It's very clear that if you're in a first position and your collateral, you have additional collateral, more than one collateral, two pieces of real estate as we have here, and there's a second mortgagee behind you that may not be secured by the full two pieces of real estate, if you decide to gratuitously release part of your collateral, you have to give a credit against your mortgage. If not, the very act which occurred in this case happened. The owner and the first mortgagee can get together and create a scheme that ends up depriving the second mortgagee the ability to collect the money on the full security.
Excuse me, Mr. Bonchi, you've stated that Rosemont and the Perlows were involved in the scheme. What is there in the record to support that remark?
Well, so what they did was we took discovery, as you said, in this case, and what we discovered was that Rosemont decided to gratuitously just release the mortgage.
Well, I understand that. But you said they engaged in a scheme. A scheme would suggest scheming, two people conspiring to do Jersey City out of its rightful second mortgage.
Well, that's what happens as a result of their decision, Rosemont, to release the collateral. That deprived Jersey City of the ability to collect on its second mortgage. Whatever you want to call it.
For the credit doctrine to apply, do you have to demonstrate some sort of nefarious intent?
Not at all. The only thing I have to prove for the credit doctrine to apply is that Rosemont knew about the second mortgage, which is undisputed in this case, since they named it in the complaint, since they entered into a consent order striking the contesting answer when they got all the insurance proceeds. That's all I have to do, but my point to Justice Albin was the reason that we have the credit doctrine in the law is to prevent the very act that happens here. I don't need to prove anything that they knew. It doesn't matter, as we argue in our brief, whether the motive is benign, whether it's a bad motive, a good motive, altruistic. As long as they knew about the second mortgage, that's all you need to prove. And in this particular instance, this particular doctrine protects the second mortgagee, and it's been around, as I've said, for over 150 years.
I was going to ask you about that, Mr. Bronke, because we're dealing here with very old case law and so many areas of priorities, Article 9 of the UCC and so forth, have been dealt with by statute over the years. And it's really striking that the credit doctrine has been out there, not spoken to by any court in a published opinion for a very long time. Why is it that you think that we don't have recent case law on this? Because as you present this, it seems like the type of priority dispute that could come up in a number of settings.
Well, Your Honor, I've been practicing a long time like you, and I haven't seen this issue come up because I don't think anyone would imagine to do the very act here that would be done without consequences. Real property law goes back to England. It is old, and there's many doctrines that go along. But, you know, when the Supreme Court, when the new Supreme Court was enacted in 1947, they adopted all the prior precedent, and especially in real estate, precedent is extremely important. There's many doctrines and equitable doctrines that go throughout. You know, we even have these whole line of equitable maxims that we go. But in this particular instance, it's a very simple doctrine. What it does is it requires, if you think about it, you say, what happens if we don't apply the doctrine, and what happens if we do? If we apply the doctrine, then the borrower has to honor its debts. Or the first mortgagee has to give us a credit for giving away the collateral, which will keep them from giving away the collateral. I'm sorry.
Mr. Bonci, can you tell me, when Jersey City took its second mortgage, what was the indebtedness to Jersey City at that moment? What was the indebtedness to Rosemont, and what was the value of the Jersey City property? Do you have those figures?
I have some of them, Your Honor. Back in June 30th, 2008, the initial loan from Rosemont to IP and Furloughs was $600,000.
Just on the Jersey City. Go ahead.
Yeah, was $600,000. On July 26, 2010, the City of Jersey City loaned $494,105, and that was supposed to be used to fix up the property to have six affordable housing units. I don't have appraisal of the value of the Jersey City property on that date.
Tell me approximately how much the Jersey City property was valued in 2010 at the time that you loaned IP Realty $400,000.
We just simply don't have that in the record. I don't have a valuation of that date. We had, you know, a valuation of after the fire, but not back when the original loan was given.
Okay, what was the value of the property? When was the fire, and what was the value of the property then?
The fire was on May 14th, 2014. And the value of the property after the fire, my recollection, is somewhere in the ballpark of $400,000.
And before the fire, what was the value?
I don't have it, Your Honor. I just don't have anything in the record that established the value at that time. When City of Jersey City did give its second mortgage, it was approximately 2 years after the first mortgage, so the collateral was of record known at that time.
The reason why I'm asking these questions, and I'm sure it's obvious to you, I'm trying to learn whether or not Jersey City, when it loaned the money in 2010, was doing so, knowing that it might not be able to recover the full amount of the full amount because the value of the Jersey City property in 2010 may have been $1 million or less. That's the reason why I'm asking the question. Is whether or not you took a risk, whether or not you took any risk in loaning the money at that time.
Well, again, Judge, I think the credit doctrine doesn't, it's a risk we take. Either the collateral is there or it's not. In this particular case, in the end, when we go to foreclose, the collateral was there because the Lakewood property was worth over $1 million. And that's what it is. There's always risk, Judge. I mean, look what happened last Friday. Chief Justice entered an order saying all final judgments and foreclosures. That's a risk we all take when we loan. We never know what's going to happen. We have this epidemic happening, and we have extraordinary measures being taken. Those are risks when you loan. But the risk you don't take is the first mortgagee gratuitously releasing part of the collateral that was securing the first mortgage. And the credit doctrine, an old equitable doctrine that I admit has been around.
The reason why I'm asking you that question, I want to be clear. If the Lakewood property didn't exist, assume it didn't exist at all, were you making a bad, I'm trying to figure out whether or not you were making a not very good loan based upon the value of the property.
Well, after the fire, it's not a good loan because the property's severely damaged. We turned over $604,036 in fire proceeds to the first mortgagee, which was more than the initial principal in the first mortgage. But the bottom line is, you know, when you give loans, there's risk involved, I agree. But one of the risks that you don't take is that if someone's going to, first mortgagee is going to release part of its collateral, they have to give a credit. And they won't release that collateral if they have to give a credit. And that's what keeps things, in my mind, fair and honest going on rather than being able to manipulate.
Did you loan the money with knowledge that Rosemont had a mortgage on the Lakewood property and therefore you felt protected by that? Are you suggesting that?
I'm suggesting it because it's a record. It was back in 2008, 2 years before the city of Jersey City gave a loan. The mortgage was a record secured by two properties. It had to be part of the analysis back then. So I would say yes, Judge, that would be the inference because unlike the credit doctrine where you can't rely on something of record. You know, you have to have actual knowledge of the second mortgage. Here, when you go and you give a second mortgage, you're getting title work, and the title work's going to tell you about the first mortgage and what secures it. So obviously the city knew that it was secured by two, and we went along, as they said, even when with the prior counsel entered into the settlement order back on March 22nd, 2000. 16, where they said, well, you can pay $75,000 to the first mortgage, to the owner, the borrower, and end this thing, or the foreclosure can continue. Everybody knew about the second mortgage, and it was expected, you know, I think the city expected they'd cough up $75,000, end it. We were surprised when they decided to unilaterally release the additional collateral. So for those reasons, Your Honors, I believe that sometimes, you know, just because something may have been around a long time doesn't mean it's bad doctrine. It is a fundamental doctrine. We have a lot of property law across the board with doctrines that protect and keep things in here. The reason we haven't had this is, quite frankly, my opinion is they didn't realize that this was the consequence of releasing the Lakewood property because this doctrine's around. It's not a secret, but we just don't have people doing this. And as a result of it, we have doctrines that are throughout, you know, the real property. And this is one of the doctrines that protects and keeps things fair. So for all those reasons, and I never had a chance below because the trial court and I guess the appellate division agreed that I had to prove some motive. And I don't need to prove a motive. All I have to do is prove knowledge, and that's undisputed. So I'll reserve my other 5 minutes unless you have any questions.
I have one last question. What was the value of the property at the time of the sheriff's sale?
Well, we didn't have the sheriff's sale yet. We're believing it's about $400,000.
Okay, is that the amount to which you say you're entitled as a credit? Can't be more than that, can it?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is the first mortgage, what's left on the first mortgage now it ballooned from 572 to a million. So the first mortgage, we eat up all the value of the anything we received at a sheriff's sale.
But you're not entitled to any more than the value of the Jersey City property. Do you agree?
Agreed.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, anyone? Thank you, Mr. Bonci. Mr. Capolupo.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The credit doctrine, as set forth in Hoy v. Bramhall, is not applicable to the facts of this case. And that's for four main reasons that I'll delve into shortly. First, and most importantly, there was no payment for the release of the Lakewood property. Two, there was a cross-collateral provision in Rosemont's mortgage that specifically provided that Rosemont had the right to go to the Jersey City property first to enforce its remedies. Third, there is no relationship between Jersey City and the owners of the released property. And four, and finally, the Lakewood property is not free and clear of liens that would make an equitable argument that Rosemont has to proceed against that property. So initially, I'd just like to address a few of the Your Honor's questions that you brought up with Mr. Bonci. First of all, Chief Justice, there was no evidence of a scheme in the trial court in the record, and the appellate division confirmed that there was absolutely no evidence of any fraudulent intent here. Jersey City conducted thorough discovery on this point, and it revealed the positions and other discovery confirmed that there was no fraudulent intent in this release. It was a good faith release with no payment whatsoever to Rosemont.
So do either of those points matter? Does it matter that there was no consideration? And does it matter whether the release was done for good reasons or nefarious ones? Mr. Bonci, if you haven't muted and could do so, that would be helpful.
It does matter, Your Honor. The circumstances of the release do matter. The reason is because it wouldn't make sense here to impose a credit for a dollar amount that the lender never received. And what Mr. Bonci is advocating.
Is there any law that supports your argument that whether there's consideration is relevant to the credit doctrine?
Well, there's basically the credit doctrine hasn't been in any modern case law as far as I know. So what we need to look at are of the Hoy v. Bramhall case, which is what Jersey City is relying on. And when we look at that case, it's from 1868, and Jersey City's relying on it for this broad proposition that any time a lender with notice of other liens releases part of its collateral, that it has to suffer a reduction in the amount owed. This is not what Hoy v. Bramhall stands for, and it could not have been the intent of the court to make such a broad statement of law beyond the set of facts that were in that particular case.
And are you familiar with the Pittman Building and Loan Association versus Wright case? Because in looking at that one, which is a much more recent vintage comparatively, it seems on all fours with the factual scenario that we have here. And there the court had no difficulty applying the credit doctrine exactly as the city of Jersey City is asking for it to be applied here.
There are some differences between that case and the present circumstances. One right away is that there was a single borrower, I believe, in the Pitt case. Here we have two borrowers, and the borrower who owns the released property had no affiliation whatsoever with Jersey City. It's one thing to say that if there's a single borrower that owns multiple properties, that the release should impose a credit on the releasing party. But here we don't have a single borrower who owns multiple properties. We have two separate borrowers who each own their own respective properties that they pledged as collateral.
So you think that's a meaningful difference with Pittman? Because Pittman was focused on the collateral and the relationship between the collateral.
Well, in I think in, it is a significant difference because in Pittman, you have to look at the equity between lenders, but with respect to their shared borrower. Here, the borrower of Jersey City is only IP Realty. IP Realty's only obligation, only real estate that it pledged was the Rosemont, was the Jersey City property. Here we have the Perlows, who are the individuals who pledged their home in Lakewood, New Jersey, as a as collateral, as part of the collateral for loan to from Rosemont. Jersey City had no affiliation with the Perlows, and that's significant because when we're looking at how the Hoy v. Brenhall and credit doctrine evolved, it eventually became part of the two funds and marshalling doctrine. These are really intertwined doctrines, and the marshalling and two funds doctrine is very clear that it only applies if there are two funds held by the same borrower. Here, we don't have the same borrower. We have two different borrowers. And I'd like to go back to the payment consideration here. When you look at these cases, the Hoy v. Bramhall in particular, which is what set forth the credit doctrine, it's there has to be a payment. Otherwise, it makes no sense. Why would we, what equitable reason would there be to impose a credit on a borrower, on a lender who releases property when it received no consideration? It didn't receive that dollar amount. So what equitable reason are we imposing a credit?
So the credit doctrine is an equitable doctrine. And Jersey City is saying you have two mortgages on which you can execute in order to secure your debt. On the Jersey City property, if you stay as the first mortgager there, they're going to get nothing. And they're saying, they're arguing that it's inequitable when you could have collected from one of two properties. You decided to collect from the one property that was going to leave Jersey City with nothing. Like, well, like putting aside the precedents in the 19th century, why isn't that an equitable argument that should resonate in the 21st century?
Well, because there's a few reasons, but one is Jersey City, when they gave their loan, did not, there's no evidence in the record that Jersey City ever relied on this Lakewood property as security, as being a source of funds for Rosemont to pursue. There's nothing in the record to show that the Jersey City ever relied on the fact that there was additional security for this loan.
But putting that and aside, you knew, your client knew, at the time that discharged the Perlows, that Jersey City would wind up with nothing, because you are casting aside, you know, one of the pieces of properties on which you could have collected on your loan, right?
Well, it's not clear from the record that Jersey City would end up with nothing here, but because they gave their own self-serving valuation of the value of the property. But when we look at the policy implications here, if Rosemont has to take a credit on these facts, then what would we be saying? We'd be telling mortgage lenders out there, hey, you may have a commercial borrower and an individual borrower, and you cannot release the personal residence of the individual borrower. Instead, on these facts, you'd have to foreclose, kick them out of their home, effectively, because this other lender, who the individuals had no relationship with, either one, didn't do his homework when he gave out the loan to see that there is a cross-collateral provision specifically allowing the senior lender to pursue only that Jersey City property, or two, assumed that the individuals would suffer first before it would have to take a second position. There's no public policy.
I'm not sure that's exactly right, because if your client had pursued its cross-collateralization right and simply foreclosed on the Jersey City property without giving the release to Lakewood, I don't think we'd be having this discussion at all, because there would be no application of the credit doctrine. It's because your client made the decision to, in addition, give the release, give up the value, any value that it had in the Lakewood property, that this equitable doctrine is being discussed. So had you had your client used its contractual right, we wouldn't be considering the credit doctrine at all. Don't you agree?
Well, if Rosemont had pursued its remedies on the Lakewood property, there'd be two individuals out of their home and Jersey's in favor of Jersey City.
No, you're not understanding my question, counsel. It's that your client gave the release. Your client could have simply used its cross-collateralization relief right under its contract, foreclosed on the Jersey City property. That would have been end of this discussion. It's because your client took the additional step of giving the release, regardless of whether there was consideration for it, that we're having the discussion about the application of the credit doctrine.
Well, I think that if there was, whether there was a release or not, it would not have resulted in a difference to Jersey City. If Rosemont had, as it's doing, pursuing the foreclosure against the Jersey City property, it doesn't matter whether they had released the Lakewood property, because they may choose, and in fact they did choose here, to not pursue a foreclosure against Lakewood property. So at the end of the day, it's Jersey City the Jersey City property that Rosemont has chosen, pursuant to its cross-collateral provision, to enforce its remedies against. And we shouldn't be punishing Rosemont or other mortgage lenders in this scenario to release their personal borrowers who have no affiliation with this second lender. And I
under
can't
the credit
that
doctrine, that does not matter.
Again,
it does not matter whether they have a relationship with the Lakewood property owners.
Respectfully, I think we need to look at the credit doctrine in terms of the facts that Hoy v. Bramhall was addressing, because that concept has not been accepted, as far as I know, in any modern jurisprudence, that there simply only has to be notice and that there is no other requirement for this. And the marshalling doctrine, the two funds doctrine, lays out the parameters for when you impose a credit, or when do you tell one lender that they have to pursue one property over another.
And how does the credit doctrine work in other jurisdictions? You're saying that the credit doctrine, as enunciated in Hoy versus Bramhall, has not been followed by any other jurisdictions. What do other jurisdictions do?
My understanding is that Hoy v. Bramhall, the concept of a credit, it involves, as in other jurisdictions, when you receive a payment for a release, you have to credit the amount that was received. And when we look at the facts in Hoy v. Bramhall for a moment, you see that it was a sale of a property that resulted in sale proceeds being paid to the senior lender. On those facts, the court in 1868 held, yes, this makes sense. You received an exchange from the borrower, senior lender. You received a payment. You needed to take credit for the value of that property or the amount you received. And I think that's a very basic concept, and that's what Hoy v. Bramhall was trying to elaborate. And I don't think the court would have intended what Jersey City is advocating today, that you apply it even where there is no. If there's no payment, there, what is the equity to impose the credit for a dollar amount that Rosemont did not receive? And I'd like to also point out that the Lakewood property that was released has other liens on it. So there's a lien for $1.2 million held by Amboy Bank on the Lakewood property. If we had chosen to pursue the Lakewood property instead, Amboy Bank would have had just as much argument, if not more so, that Rosemont should have pursued the Jersey City property instead. So, again, we're looking at a set of facts here.
So why shouldn't they both be pursued? And to the extent that they have liens or other encumbrances, that's all worked out either among the parties or, if necessary, by the application of equitable principles. Why can't, if there are two properties on there, why isn't it fair to have them go after both?
And I think the answer to that question, Your Honor, is that because there are two different borrowers here. Again, if we were talking about IP Realty, the borrower, as owning both of these properties, it makes sense. The concept is don't let the borrower get a windfall by having one property lien free and then the two lenders fighting it out over one remaining property. But here, we don't have the same borrower, so that equitable concept doesn't make sense here because we don't have a relationship between the Perlos who own the Lakewood property as their home. There is no relationship between those individuals and Jersey City. They knew nothing of Jersey City when they took this mortgage loan. So Jersey City coming in as a second mortgagee on a property that the Perlos know nothing about, there is no equity to be done to say that, well, because Jersey City has this lien that came after you took your mortgage and you have to suffer foreclosure and potentially lose your residence. That cannot be the public policy idea behind the equitable considerations. And I just want to emphasize more so the cross-collateral provision here. We're talking about the recording statute and what it was incumbent upon Jersey City when they gave their mortgage. It was incumbent upon them to go to the county clerk's office, pull the mortgage, and see what are the rights that this lender reserved for itself. And cross-collateral provisions are very common nowadays, and as far as I know, it was not a provision that was in the mortgage in these 1800s cases. Otherwise, the courts would have addressed it. So when we talk about equity, we have to take into account the fact that Jersey City either knew or should have known that that Rosemont reserved this right to pursue all of its remedies against Jersey City, against the Jersey City property. It's almost as if that Jersey City and the Perlos individuals are complete strangers. It's not a situation where we have one borrower and we don't want that one borrower to get a windfall.
What was the value of the Lakewood property? Do you know?
Jersey City valued the Lakewood property as approximately $1.2 million, I believe.
And you're telling us Amboy had a $1.2 million mortgage on the property?
They have a lien, a judgment lien, against the Lakewood property. I don't think it's in the record as to the origination of that lien, but Amboy Bank does have a lien against that property. And it's nearly, if not double, what Jersey City has on Jersey City property.
Is Amboy a second mortgagee on the Lakewood property?
Again, Your Honor, I'm not sure that this was in the record as to what the nature of that Amboy Bank lien was, but they do have a judgment lien. I'm not sure if it was because they originally had a mortgage on that property or otherwise, but they do have a lien against that property, and they do have an interest in, of course, not being cut off, just as Jersey City has an interest in that.
No, I'm raising that question because if they were the primary lender, you have a much stronger argument if you were in the second position on the Lakewood property.
Are
you following me?
To clarify that, no, we are not second position on the Lakewood property, as I understand it. We are a first lender on that property, but Amboy Bank has a subordinate lien to us that would be cut off in a foreclosure of the Lakewood property.
What is Israel Perlo's relationship to IP Realty?
Israel Perlo is a member of IP Realty. He is only a partial member. There is another member, Shimon Ginsberg, who has no interest whatsoever in the Lakewood property. So this is, I'm not sure if this is where Your Honor was going, but this is not a situation where the LLC entity, the corporate entity, is a solely owned entity of the individuals. It was a distinct entity with its own membership structure that was distinct from the Perlos.
And it's a limited liability corporation, correct?
A limited liability company, correct.
Company, okay.
Now, I think I understand what your argument. You're saying that if Rosemont had gone after, had decided to go after the Lakewood property and eat up all of the equity, that Amboy would have made the same argument that Jersey City is making today? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, Your Honor. That Amboy Bank would be here with the very same argument and perhaps even a stronger argument because of the amount of their lien being double that of Jersey City's, that, well, Rosemont, you shouldn't go after Lakewood property, you should be foreclosing the Jersey City property so that I don't get cut off as Amboy Bank. So I think...
Does the credit doctrine apply if some third party places a lien on the property? Or is it limited toward mortgaged premises?
I think the credit doctrine applies only if the other property is free of liens. And that's the cases that Jersey City relies on. It's not quite clear, but it appears that all of the properties that were released in that line of cases were lien-free and that they did not have any other liens on them. So it made sense in those circumstances to say, senior lender, you should be going to foreclose against the lien-free property, not against the property with a junior lien on it. So again, this is a distinguishing factor here between the credit doctrine as it's set forth in these cases that Jersey City relies on and what we have here.
But would Amboy, and I think I'm following up here on the Chief's question, would Amboy have the exact argument that Jersey City has, given that, from what you've described, Amboy had a judgment lien, not a mortgage, under the credit doctrine?
Under the credit doctrine, I think Amboy Bank would have just as much of an equitable interest. Again, this is an equitable doctrine, so we have to look at, it is a judgment lien as opposed to Rosemont, Jersey City having a mortgage, but at the end of the day, it is really still a lien that is potentially cut off by a foreclosure. And if we're going to do equity between two lenders, we should also take into account the fact that there are other lien holders who have just as much of an equitable interest in the Rosemont proceeding against the other property.
One distinction is if you're a judgment creditor as Amboy is, you're not making a decision to loan money, right? You have a judgment against these individuals who own the property, and you pursue the judgment. You take all the steps you have to take to protect yourself, but you're not. There was no point in time at which you were assessing the risks of lending money to that entity that would be secured by that property, and that really does distinguish the mortgage from the lien situation.
So, again, this isn't quite in the record, but I'm confident that a judgment by Amboy Bank for $1.2 million was affiliated with some kind of loan originally. Again, this isn't quite in the record, but I think the concept here is that even if we don't have necessarily a loan from Amboy Bank, we do have this consideration of this is not a lien-free property, and what do we do when there's multiple lien holders, as we have here? And I think the answer is the credit doctrine is too narrow, and we can't view the Hoy v. Bramhall and credit doctrine and expand it to situations where there are, in complex society now, there are multiple liens on various properties, and we have multiple borrowers here. Again, I can't stress enough that this is not the same borrower that Jersey City had. Jersey City's borrower is only the owner of the Jersey City property. It's not the owner of the Lakewood property. So Jersey City either knew this or should have known this. And there's nothing in the record that Jersey City relied on the property when they were calculating their risk, if they did or didn't. So I don't think the facts of this case fall under the credit doctrine for those very reasons.
Any other questions? Anything you'd like to add, Mr. Capolupo?
If there are no further questions, I would like to thank the court for their time and stay well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Banshee, rebuttal.
Yes, a few brief points. First of all, the Amboy Bank, there's nothing to show it ever had a mortgage. DA 24 on August 19, 2010, which would put it in a third position. They did enter a judgment against Israel Perlo in a sum of $1,279,078.02. So they're not a mortgage, they're not a secured lender as the city of Jersey City is, or as Rosemont. They are a judgment creditor. Their judgment will survive the foreclosure. They didn't loan money on the judgment. There's nothing there in the record. It is not the same. But the question of attempting to collect money, releasing collateral, the fact they released it did not release the Amboy Bank judgment. It was on that property because it was against Mr. Perlo individually. I think the other point that was made, I think, by questions by one of the justices was that they say they're strangers. These are simply the principal owners of IP Realty. There's nothing new or nothing strange to that. Many times people have to personally pledge their own real estate, and they usually keep their own house in their own name. These were conscious decisions made. As to the cross-collateral, City of Jersey City is not a in privity of contract. They did not sign that mortgage. That's between Rosemont, but not Jersey City. And Jersey City, in this case, you know, the credit doctrine supersedes what they may put in their mortgage document. And I do disagree that the concept of cross-collateralization is something that was invented in 2010 or 2000. This is talking about real estate property law. All those cases have fact patterns where there's different properties that are pledging. And that's the same concept here. And there's nothing wrong with the concept. And my argument says that it's simply in the end that the Rosemont, by not allowing Perlo's to actually honor their debts by unilaterally releasing it, has to give a credit. They could have chosen to make these people honor their debts. They're the ones who decided to give them a windfall here and deprive Jersey City of.
Mr. Banshee, if Rosemont hadn't released the Lakewood property and it simply foreclosed against the Jersey City property, would you have an argument under the credit doctrine?
Well, I think I would, because the first mortgage was secured by two pieces of property. It was secured by two pieces of property. And they have to go after both pieces of property. And in that particular instance, they were in a first position on the Lakewood property. So, and what I think some of the problem here is that to attempt to defeat the credit doctrine, my adversaries argued through the two funds doctrine. The two funds doctrine is in the appellate division decision. We didn't get cert on that doctrine, but that doctrine is a different doctrine, and the issue of privy, the same parties, they were defenses that were used and prevailed on the twin funds doctrine. They can't now turn around and use that on the credit doctrine, because the only thing I have to prove on the credit doctrine, and all those cases are clear, not just one case, we got a half dozen, we cited people. All I have to prove is Rosemont knew about there was a second mortgage on the property. And if they decided to be nice to Mr. and Mrs. Perlo and discharge part of the collateral, they have to give a credit. And
how nice,
simple,
how nice were so they being when there's a lien on their property of more than $1.2 million? No matter what Rosemont does with respect to Lakewood property, there's a lien on the property greater than the value of the property. Am I mistaken?
Well, you're not mistaken, but Mr. Justice, collecting on a personal residence in New Jersey when you have a lien against one of two owners and it's their marital home, it's not so easy, okay? You're not going to be able to sell that property or divide it under what I understand to be existing case law. That judgment creditor is not going to be able to force a sale because she doesn't. You have to have both spouses when it's a marital home on it to sell it. So, you know, again, they got a judgment. It attaches to any real estate in either party's name, but it's a different analysis, a different concept, and it's not going to be so easy to sell the property, I suppose.
That's an argument for Rosemont. That seems to be an argument for Rosemont. You're saying that if Rosemont attempted to foreclose on the Lakewood property. It wasn't going to be easy. That the easier course was to foreclose on the Jersey City property. Is that what you just said?
No, because I was saying for the fact that Amboy only had a judgment against one, both owners of the Lakewood property were signed on to the mortgage. So
your point, and just want to make sure I understand, your point is that it had Amboy was limited because it only had a judgment lien against one of the two owners. So even though that's a big number out there, that in terms of that lien, in terms of foreclosing and selling the property, it was unlikely.
Correct.
Mr. Bonci, have you expanded the credit doctrine? I think Justice Lubecki and I may be going after the same thing.
Yeah.
When you're saying that it applies even if there's no release of the second property?
Well, what we're saying is, I don't think I argued that because they released the second property, it applies. If they hadn't released the second property, we wouldn't be here today. We would have gone ahead. They were closing both properties. We would have gone ahead and we would have either asked the judgment to be increased with ours or bid at the sale. It's because both properties secured it and they released one.
So I want to ask my earlier.
Ask it again.
Let me ask the earlier question again, because I heard a different answer and perhaps I misunderstood or we didn't communicate. If they had not released, if Rosemont had not released the Lakewood property and instead elected only to pursue the Jersey City property, would you have an argument under the credit doctrine?
I still think yes, because I think they were obligated to foreclose both properties that was in their complaint.
Under the credit doctrine?
Under credit?
No, they were. It was on their mortgage. On the credit doctrine, they're in essence, by not foreclosing one property and just limiting it to Jersey City, they released that collateral. I mean, what they've done is, if you follow that through.
Not necessarily.
What case law supports that?
No. I wanted to follow through. Make sure I'm talking about the same thing here. What you're saying is, they would have two sheriff sales, so to say. So they start the first sheriff sale on the Jersey City property. And there's only enough to pay off their mortgage, and they don't hold a second sheriff sale on the Lakewood property. Therefore, Jersey City is cut off and gets nothing. And I'm suggesting that would defeat the credit doctrine, because they have essentially released one of the two collateral on property. But that's not what happened here. What they did, and that might be an argument for another day, another case, another back pattern. What they did here is they released the Lakewood property, and by releasing the Lakewood property, they in fact have to give us a credit. I mean, the other thing is an interesting argument, but it's not this fact pattern. And I'm not sure they could do that. I would argue they couldn't manipulate which collateral they go after when they secure both, because it has the same effect of defeating the credit doctrine. But in this case, they did release the Lakewood property as a result of releasing the Lakewood property.
Well, that foreclosure would take it further away from the fact patterns that we see in these old cases involving the credit doctrine. Perhaps another equitable principle would be of assistance to your client in that situation, but that might not be the credit doctrine. Because the credit doctrine, would not be dealing with that double foreclosure issue. It would not extend.
Correct. Yeah,
so you might be able to go into chancery and make an equitable argument about the fairness of the situation, but that might not be under the title of credit doctrine.
Correct.
Okay.
Ms. Bonci, did you say that the Lakewood property, that Amboy was in the third position on the Lakewood property? Did I mishear you?
Yeah, let me just go back and check my dates here. But the
tell us who was in the second position then.
Well, I'm sorry, in the Lakewood property, they're second. The judgment, our loan was given on July 26, 2010 on the Jersey City property. If I said that, I misspoke. My point was that before this judgment was docketed on August 2010, it would have been entered after we'd closed and gave the mortgage on the Jersey City property. So they were in a second. We don't have and if I said that, I misspoke. You're absolutely right, Justice Alvin. City of Jersey City has no lien on the Lakewood property.
Thank you, Council.